شما یک شخصیت مذهبی هستید و در قالب مذهب عمل میکردید، به این ترتیب مقام برجسته‌ای پیدا کردید، یک عالم روحانی هستید. چطور شده که شما یک مرتبه آدم سیاسی شدید و دیگه در قالب شخصیت مذهبی عمل نمی کنید بلکه یک شخصیت سیاسی هستید؟ چرا اصلا از قالب مذهب کار خودتون رو خارج کردید؟
Is one of the religious cities of Iran, with a lot of religious schools. Faizieh is one of the oldest of such schools, about 90 years old. It is where conspicuous figures studied and taught. Imam Khomeini, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, is one of the most famous and popular figures who lived in Qom for a long time, studied and taught other clergymen there. He is the one whose campaign against the Shah began in this city and this school and continued right up to the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Ruhollah Khomeini began studying in Khomein and Iraq and then came to this school. He studied in this room. He passed different levels of studies and reached the highest level, which is a marja, or a religious authority. Along with other high-ranking religious leaders, he started teaching. The people of Qom used to call him Haji Agha Ruhollah. He was a quiet clergyman who taught philosophy and fiqh, and did his best to make Ayatollah Burujerdi the supreme religious leader of Iran. Ayatollah Burujerdi was the man who campaigned against the changes that the Shah wanted to make upon the request of the United States to the last day of his life. Iran, as one of the major allies of the United States and its most lucrative oil partner, had extensive borders with the former Soviet Union. That is the reason why American politicians were afraid of the spread of communism in Iran during the Cold War. This issue, and ways to prevent it, were discussed with the Shah in many meetings. The preemptive policy of the United States in Iran got more serious when Kennedy came to the Oval Office. He asked the Shah to make changes in the political, social, and economic structure of Iran in order to avoid a workers' revolution. But the Shah had a serious problem in implementing the reforms that the United States had in mind. He had to get the approval of religious leaders in Qom, especially Ayatollah Burujerdi, the then supreme religious leader of Iran. This never happened while Ayatollah Burujerdi was alive. He passed away in April 1961. People from all over Iran went to Qom to attend the funeral of their religious leader as soon as they heard the news of his death. On that very day, this street was full of people who had come to bury their religious leader in the holiest place in Qom, the shrine of Her Holiness Masumeh. Meanwhile, people asked each other the question of who would replace Ayatollah Burujerdi. Sayyid Haydar Mir Yunusi attended the funeral and has a vivid memory of that day.
من همون روز فوت مرحوم آیت الله بروجردی که برای تشییع جنازه
On the day we went for Ayatollah Burujerdi's funeral at the shrine of Her Holiness Lady Masumeh, a man was asking another, what should we do regarding our religious queries and who should we follow? I saw the man pointing to a person I had never met personally then. I had heard the name Haji Agha Ruhollah Khomeini, but I had not seen him. In response to the questioner who said, people do not know this person, he replied, if they knew him, they would never follow anyone else.
مذهب اسلام غیر از مذهب مسیحیت است. شما اطلاعی از مذهب اسلام ندارید که مذهب اسلام یک مذهب خشک مربوط به فقط ربط بین بنده و خدا نیست. اسلام یک مذهب سیاسی است که سیاستش با احکام دیگرش با عباداتش مخلوط به هم است و همونطوری که حکومت ها ابعاد سیاسی دارند اسلام هم دارد و من الان هم دارم عمل به مذهب می کنم نه اینکه از مذهب خارج شدم. تا حالا تا چند وقت پیش از این در یک بود مذهب من واقع بودم و عمل می کردم، حالا در بود دیگرش و همه اینها مذهب است. و اینکه گفتید خارج شدم از جهات مذهبی، نه اینطور نیست، الانم من در جهات مذهبی دارم عمل می کنم.
After the death of Ayatollah Burujerdi, the Shah didn't see any obstacles on his way to implement the American reforms. First, he dissolved the parliament, and then he took the first steps of reform through Prime Minister Asadullah Alam. Alam's cabinet passed a bill in the absence of the parliament, which removed the conditions of taking the oath on the Quran and being a Muslim for those elected to the city councils. This decision received the harsh objection of the Imam and other religious leaders in Qom. The Imam's first telegraph was sent to the Shah after the ratification of this bill. One of the clergymen who supported the Imam candidly against this bill was Mr. Falsafi.
این بود حضرت آقای خمینی رضوان الله علیه.
The story is that Mr. Khomeini found it necessary to pay attention to the subject and made it known. Others helped him out. They tried hard and held some meetings in Mr. Behbahani's home where I gave a lecture. The bazaar was closed for 3 days. There were a lot of arguments, and as a result, the government backed down. They noticed they could not resist that wave.
In the end, the government annulled this bill in a couple of months. Sometime later, the Shah got involved, and on January 9, 1962, announced holding a referendum on the reforms called the Revolution of the Shah and Nation. He fixed the date of the referendum for 17 days later. The Shah wanted to hold a quick referendum and take advantage of people's ignorance in order to justify his reforms. The Shah's decision met the religious leaders' resistance, and especially the Imams. Imam Khomeini, who considered this referendum against the constitution, issued a statement to the people and expressed his reasons to oppose the referendum. He said the reason was that the referendum was not mentioned in Iran's constitution and that it was not clear who was qualified to hold it. He mentioned that even if there was going to be a referendum as such, there should be enough time for the pros and cons so that the people could cast their votes only after they had heard the arguments on both sides. For these reasons, the Imam and other religious leaders asked the people not to take part in the referendum. The people in Tehran and Qom took to the streets in objection to the Shah's decision. The bazaars in Tehran and Qom were shut down in protest. However, the Shah finally announced that the majority of the people had voted for his reforms in a bogus referendum. The Imam then issued a statement and called for mourning instead of celebrations on the very eve of the Persian New Year in 1963. I announced this Nowruz mourning time for Muslims in order to warn them against the dangers that lie ahead of us regarding the Holy Quran and the country. The Imam's statement was backed by other religious leaders, and many people did not celebrate the beginning of spring as they had done for thousands of years. Thus, the first day of the new year passed, and the second day, which was the anniversary of Imam Sadegh's demise, came along. And according to the custom, there was a ceremony held in Fazia School. Sayyid Taqi Dorcheyi remembers that day very well.
Look, this was not a new meeting. Every year, on the martyrdom day of Imam Sadegh, we had a mourning ceremony at Fazia School. It was held as it had been in the previous years. But that year in particular, it was held during the protests against the Shah. It was a critical time. Imam had come to the fore and issued statements one after another. He invited people to step forward, resist, and fight against the government.
The ceremony was held as usual, and a preacher was giving a lecture when little by little, things became suspicious. The security forces who were waiting for this opportunity attacked the people. Then, Muhammad Shojaa Fard was at Fazia School that day and witnessed everything himself.
Some chanted salawat from this corner, another one from another corner. Suddenly, we noticed that the people were ready for the lecture, and the lecturer was on top of Mimbar. They started. Of course, the lecturer tried to keep them quiet, but it got louder. People tried to stop them. For example, I saw the one next to me stood up and chanted salawat. I noticed this was ruining the ceremony. I took his hand to make him sit down. This started the fight little by little. Well, there was a fight in the ceremony. It was good for them. They brought out their sticks and bats and beat people up. They did not predict such a thing, and security forces got into the school from the other side. It was a terrible day.
The imam was at home that evening when he heard the news about the clashes. The clergyman who had run away from security agents came to imam's home and explained whatever they had seen. They were all frightened and didn't know what would happen. Ayatollah Amini was at imam's home that day and remembers those moments very well.
It was a horrible situation, really, really horrible. When we heard the news about all those killings, we shivered in our shoes and we were worried. What would happen next? Why it was like that, I mean, fear had hit all of us, really. Imam gave us a little talk after the prayers, which changed the atmosphere altogether. He said that they have dug their own graves by killing religious students. They have ruined themselves and cannot remain in power no more. Fighting against Imam Sadegh's school and Imam Sadegh's students is not easy. They will be destroyed and they have lost their face. The talk was more than this, of course. I remember these words only because they were interesting to me.
Attacking the Fazia Seminary and beating the people and the clergymen was extensively protested by religious leaders. Many telegraphs were written in different cities against the Shah, condemning this tragic event. But the main protest happened in Tehran and Qom about 2 months later, simultaneous with Ashura on August the 3rd, 1963. Ashura is the 10th day of Muharram, when all Shia Muslims take to the mosques and streets to mourn the martyrdom of the Prophet's grandson and their third imam, Imam Hussein. But mourning didn't proceed as usual in Tehran that day. People held Imam Khomeini's pictures instead of the Shah's and chanted slogans to condemn the Fazia incident instead of crying the usual mourning chants. The protest changed its route towards Tehran University, and the traditional annual mourning turned to an emotional and long street protest.
The mourning chants and talks were totally different. For example, it was not customary to pound their feet, but people pounded their feet. It was obvious that they were protesting.
هر روزش آشوراست فیضیه قتلگاست خون جیگر علما واویلا واویلا شد موسم یاری مولانا الخمینی شد موسم
Khomeini. The same afternoon in Qom, the imam was supposed to go to Fasiya school to give a lecture. The people of Qom, who had fresh memory of the attack against Fasiya, were standing in front of the imam's home to accompany him. They worried that the imam might be harmed.
Fasiya dar azhan yani hamun jayi ke tullab ro qalb.
In the public's mind, Fasiya is the place where they slaughtered religious students, where they beat them and killed some. Therefore, it was frightening for the people. So the farmers of Jamkaran were in some way informed and had gathered in front of Imam's home. And just as Imam got out, they surrounded the car Imam was riding. And some of these farmers had sickles, some had shovels, and some even had pickaxes. I mean, they had all these tools with them.
People accompanied the imam to Fasiya. The imam walked through the crowd, sat on the minbar, and began his address. This was the first time that the imam addressed the Shah like this. Days after his lecture, intelligence service agents went to Qom overnight to arrest the imam. They arrested the imam and took him to Tehran. On the morning of August 6th, the news of the imam's arrest passed from mouth to mouth in Qom and Tehran, and soon all people knew that the imam was arrested. Muhammad Ali Haj Abul Qasimi lived in Tehran and went to work as usual when he heard the news.
He said Khomeini is in prison. They arrested Khomeini last night. Today, Khomeini calls for those who might help him. Who is Khomeini's friend? The porters with three or four bales on their back straightened up and dropped the bale and chanted, "Release Khomeini or kill us." Bookkeepers dropped the books and left work. It was such an amazing movement. Anyone who was there could talk as much as he could take up. It is not possible to completely elaborate on that.
Little by little, a huge rally was formed. The people surrounded the radio building and prevented the broadcast of programs for a few hours. Not being able to disperse people, the police asked the army for help. Soldiers then came to streets and opened fire on the people. The rally of August the 6th ended with the killing and wounding of a lot of people, and the army took control of the situation by implementing a curfew that afternoon and arresting many people. Besides Tehran, similar rallies occurred in Qom, Baramin, and Shiraz, and all were suppressed by the police and the army. These rallies and bitter events that occurred on that day were later known as the beginning of the formation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The imam didn't know about the clashes of August the 6th. That day, the imam was under arrest in a cell in Eshrat Abad barracks. Intelligence service agents wanted to start their interrogation. The imam had called his arrest illegal, so they showed him his arrest warrant. Regarding Ruhollah al-Musavi al-Khomeini, who was being arrested because of acting against national security, because of the fear of conspiracy, and the importance of the offense, temporary arrest warrant is issued, which can be objected to in 24 hours. The imam wrote at the bottom of the page, "In the name of God, I object to this warrant. Ruhollah al-Musavi al-Khomeini, August the 6th, 1963. The interrogation was going on, but the imam didn't answer any of the questions. Meanwhile, internal and external pressures were mounting to release the imam. Many disapproving telegraphs from inside and outside of Iran were sent to the Shah. All telegraphs condemned the arrest of the imam and the killing of the people. A few months passed. The imam was still in prison, and he didn't answer any questions. Pakhravan, the head of Iran's intelligence service, went to Ishrahabad barracks himself to speak with the imam. Pakhravan knew that he could not hold the imam in prison longer than this. He told the imam, "It is necessary to tell you that politics is trick, lie, and deception. It is our job. Religious leaders should not taint themselves with these affairs and should not interfere in politics." The imam responded to him, "We have not interfered in the politics that you defined." Finally, Imam Khomeini was released in April 1964 after 10 months and returned to Qom. But the protest that started on June 5, 1963 continued, and the Islamic Revolution gained victory through Imam Khomeini's leadership after 14 years.
پس به این ترتیب این در ذات مذهب مورد اعتقاد شماست که باید حکومت داشته باشید و باید مردم حکومت بکنند و اسلام حکومت بکنه
ذاتی
نه اینکه استنباط شخص شما باشه از مذهب آیا در تاریخ معاصر ایران هم این استنباط وجود داره از مذهب وجود داشته قبل از شما از مذهب
کسانی قبل از ما که از اول که مذهب پیدا شده اینطور پیدا شده است در اسلام زمان خود رسول الله زمان حضرت امیر زمان خلفای دیگه یه مذهب در این حالی که احکام شرعیهی عبادیهی بوده است در این احکام این حال احکام سیاسی هم بوده است از قبیل اینکه جنگ ها می رفتن روابط داشتن با طوایف دیگر و چیزهای دیگری که مربوط به حکومت است در اسلام بوده است و این مسئله نیست که مخفی باشه بر کسی همه علمای اسلام این را قبول دارن
ولی منظور من این بود که در تاریخ معاصر ایران به یه دوره برخورد میکنیم که همچین استنباطی لااقل در صحنه واقعیت های سیاسی وجود نداشته
استنباط بوده است ذکر نکردن و الا در کتاب ها هست کتاب ها پر است از احکام سیاسی
Azadi Square is where people of Tehran gather every year to celebrate the anniversary of their revolution's victory. Their first huge gathering occurred in Muharram on the January 1979. The great rally paved the way to the final victory of the revolution and also changed the name of the square from Shahyad to Azadi. At the time, the Imam was in Paris, spending his 14th year of exile. It was near Muharram, the month Shia Muslims mourned the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. The Imam had asked people to take to the streets peacefully.
محرم ماهی است که در اون ماه مردم آمادن برای شنیدن مطالب حق و الان مطلب حق ما همین قضیه ای است که پیش داریم که آزادی و استقلال و ماه محرم را من امر کردم که راجع به این مسائل صحبت بکنند و مجالس داشته باشند و اگر چنانچه من کردند اونها بریزند در خیابانها و تظاهر کنند تا چه بشه
The Imam's presence in Paris made it possible for many journalists to meet and have interviews with him. These interviews made them more sensitive to the internal issues of Iran and more reports were made about people's fight against the Shah. As the Imam asked people to rally peacefully on the 9th and 10th of Muharram, known as Tasu'a and Ashura respectively, in 1979, many journalists came to Iran to cover the event. This rally was later called the Great Referendum of Iranians. A few days later, Sadegh Tambatambayi showed the photos of this rally to the Imam.
Imam had not seen any photos of the rally himself. It was only related to him that the rally was like this or like that. It was crowded and so on and so forth. But Imam had not seen the images himself, something like clergymen with clenched fists in the front row. Up to a few years ago, they said such a clergyman is political. Imam always warned that we must form a government. He said they have to be political. The Prophet was a politician. Now, you see how clergymen and the clerics entered the scene and how they came to actually run the stage. In some moments, you see the image of Imam. It shows how happy Imam was. In the photo that you mentioned, I am translating Mr. Shorlato's words for Imam. That clergymen are in the front row. The most interesting point is that religious and non-religious politicians stood actually by Imam in the political stage. This is the excerpt of that news analysis. And this rally showed that the Shah did not have any place in Iran anymore. The monarchy was already over in Iran.
شما گفتیم که شاه مخلوعه لطفاً دلایل خودتون رو بر این نظر بفرمایید
ما که گفتیم مخلوع است باز مسامحه کردیم شاه از اول شاه نبود پدرش هم نبود و دلیل این است که مجلس مؤسسان که درست کردن مجلس مؤسسان چرنیزه‌ای بود که باید به تاریخ رجوع کنید و چون مجلس مؤسسان باطل بود از این جهت از اول نه رضا شاه شاه بود نه پسرش و بر فرض اینکه از این جهت مسامحه کنیم دلیل بر اینکه مخلوع است رفراندوم مکرر ایران است که یکی چند روز تاسو آواز کرد همه ی مردم میگن نمیخواییم و به حسب قانون سلطنت یک چیزیست که ملت باید به شاه بدهد و سلطنت را ملت از شاه گرفت بنابراین
اگر به فرض ملت تأیید میکرد شاه رو سلطنتش رو قبول میکردید
من قبول نمیکردم لیکن ما اکثریت را احترام میذاشت
January 16th, 1979 Iranian newspapers used their largest fonts to break the news that the Shah left People saw the victory nearby and believed that they could achieve great goals with empty hands. The countdown for the victory had already started. It was now time for the Imam to double the joy of the victory.
As far as I remember, we were supposed to return to Iran on January 26th. It was January 21st or 26th when they said we were going to Iran. We said, oh my God, the Shah's people are still running the country. What will happen if we go? We were all worried for the Imam. Actually, no one thought about himself really. Everybody was willing to sacrifice himself for the Imam and his noble cause. I can tell you with certainty that the night we were coming to Iran, everybody was against it, except Imam himself.
The atmosphere in Nuful al-Shato was kind of strange, filled with fear and joy. The Imam wanted to return to Iran. The news spread so fast. Bakhtiar, the then Prime Minister, ordered the shutdown of the airports. The Imam's flight was delayed for a week. Meanwhile, people took to the streets and urged Bakhtiar to open the airports.
من از آقایان ایرانی هایی که کار
همراهی میکنند با ما. متشکرم. من بنا داشتم که فردا را در پیش ایرانی ها و همدوش با اونها مبارزه ادامه دهم و هر رنجی که اونها میبرند من هم با اونها باشم. لکن دولت خائن از این امر مانع شد و همه فرودگاه‌های ایران را بست و من پس از باز شدن فرودگاه‌ها بلافاصله خواهم رفت.
Finally, airports opened up and the trip was scheduled. The Imam, accompanied by 120 journalists, was supposed to fly by an Air France aeroplane from Paris to Tehran. The Imam packed up on January 31st and bid farewell to the people of Nufla Chateau. He gathered all the people who had contributed in one way or another in the past few months to thank them.
It was about 2 hours prior to heading to Paris when Dr. Yazdi asked us to go see Imam. We went to Imam's place with that group. I have the picture with me. Well, Imam talked a little about what we had done and actually thanked us. Then he said, "I don't want you to have any obligation to come along. This trip can be really dangerous. I wouldn't like any of you to be harmed. If you don't want to come along, it's okay, then stay." But then everybody agreed to join and come along. Then Imam said, "Now that you like to join me and accompany me, then be it."
On that day, the route from Mehrabad Airport to Azadi Square and Azadi Street witnessed one of its happiest and most crowded days. People had come to the streets in the early morning and counted the moments to see the Imam. The Imam's pictures were everywhere. Banners welcoming Imam were here and there. And everybody wanted to have a share in this huge welcoming ceremony. Streets were cleaned up and covered with flowers. People were eagerly waiting for Imam. Many had come early to find a suitable place so that they could take a glimpse at the Imam. The people themselves took the responsibility for the order and security of the rally. Many people had been selected to secure the rally, and all had bands on their arms. They did their very best to hold a perfect welcoming ceremony for the Imam. The huge number of people who filled the streets changed all the previous predictions and plans. The Imam had announced that he would have his first speech in the cemetery where the martyrs of the revolution lay. The welcoming committee had set up a stage in that place. On the morning of February 1st, 1979, the people had gathered around the stage and counted the seconds to see their Imam. They wanted to hear and see the first lecture of Imam in Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery after 14 years of exile. They were difficult moments, and nobody knew the reaction of the government. Would the Imam be arrested? Or would he get off the plane safely? Finally, the airplane carrying Imam landed at 9:35 in the morning in Mehrabad Airport, and after a few minutes, the Imam got off the plane. He entered the arrival lounge accompanied by people and left the airport for Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery. The car Imam was in disappeared in the crowd and then reappeared. It couldn't open its way to the cemetery. People had blocked its way because they wanted to see the Imam for themselves. The car stopped and the welcoming authorities could hardly take the Imam to another car and then to the helicopter they had arranged for. The helicopter took the Imam to Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery. The helicopter landed near the graves of martyrs of the revolution. Security officials took the Imam to the stage. The Imam went to the stage and people started chanting Allahu Akbar, meaning God is great.
Allah. این صدایی است که در بهشت زهرا و در تمامی سرزمین وسیع من پدید انداز
است. الله اکبر.
The ceremony began. The imam turned to the graves of the martyrs and began his historic address by extending his condolences to the martyrs' families. He called the Shah's regime illegal and promised people to establish a new government.
ما در این مدت مصیبت ها دیدیم، مصیبت های بسیار بزرگ و بعض پیروزی ها حاصل شد که البته اون هم بزرگ بود. خب ما حساب بکنیم که این مصیبت ها برای چه به این ملت وارد شد؟ مگر این ملت چه می گفت و چه می گوید که از اون وقتی که صدای ملت در آمده است تا حالا قتل و ظلم و غارت و همه اینها ادامه دارد؟ ملت ما چه می گفتند که مستحق به این عقوبات شدند؟ ملت ما یک مطلبش این بود که این سلطنت پهلوی از اول که پایه گذاری شد برخلاف قوانین بود، بنابراین سلطنت محمد رضا اولا که چون سلطنت پدرش قاطع چیز بود، خلاف قانون بود و با زور و با سرنیزه تأسیس شده بود، مجلس غیر قانونی است. پس من سلطنت محمد رضا هم غیر قانونی است. من از شما مردم تهران سوال می کنم که آیا این وکلایی که در مجلس هستند، چه در مجلس سنا و چه در مجلس شورا، شما اطلاع داشتید که اینا را خودتون تعیین کنید؟ اکثر این مردم میشناسن این افرادی را که به عنوان مجلس و به عنوان وکیل مجلس سنا یا مجلس شورا در مجلس هستند، یا این هم با زور تعیین شده بدون اطلاع مردم؟ مجلسی که بدون اطلاع مردم است و بدون رضایت مردم است، این مجلس مجلس غیر قانونی است. و اما دولتی که ناشی میشد از یک شاهی که خودش و پدرش غیر قانونی است، خودش علاوه بر او غیر قانونی است، وکلایی که تعیین کرده است غیر قانونی است، مجلس دولتی که از همچه مجلسی و همچه سلطانی انشا بشد، این دولت غیر قانونی است. ما میگیم که خود اون آدم، دولت اون آدم، مجلس اون آدم، تمام اینها غیر قانونی است و اگر ادامه به این بدن اینها مجرمند و باید محاکمه بشن و ما اونها را محاکمه میکنیم. من دولت تعیین میکنم، من تو دهن این دولت میزنم، من دولت تعیین میکنم، من به پشتیبانی این ملت دولت تعیین میکنم، من به واسطه اینکه ملت مرا قبول دارد.
Ten days after this lecture, the revolution gained victory. The Imam ordered Mr. Bazargan to create an interim government. One of the first orders of Imam was holding a referendum, in which people were supposed to decide for the Islamic Republic.
Mr. Mehdi Bazargan, based on the recommendation of the Revolutionary Council and the religious and legal rights attributed to the consensus reached by the nation of Iran through huge gatherings and extensive rallies in all over Iran toward the leader of the movement and because I trust in your firm belief in the holy religion of Islam and that I am aware of your background in Islamic and national protests. I, without considering partisan relationships and your political affinity, assign you to form the interim government in order to manage the affairs of the country and especially holding a referendum about changing the political system of the country to Islamic Republic and forming the founding committee of people's representatives to ratify the constitution of the new government and the election of people's representatives based on the new constitution.
I went to Qom to see Imam. It was mid-March. I told Imam that preparations were made as he ordered, and God willing, we can have a referendum by the end of June, August, or even September. He asked, "What? No way! This Nowruz holiday, you must hold the referendum." I said, "You mean in these 10 to 12 days?" He said, "Yes, exactly." I then immediately said, but there were several obstacles. Firstly, some people in the universities and political parties say that it's not a democratic way to ask only one question from the people and give them only one choice. There are people who do not want monarchy, but don't want an Islamic Republic system either. You are asking people to say yes or no to the Islamic Republic, basically. People have the choice of the former kingdom and monarchy, that is, in their mind, lingering on still, or that of the new Islamic Republic system. Now, if they don't want that or this one, it might create some problems later on. Imam then asked us what to do. I said my opinion and that there are two segments on this paper, yes and no. I recommended that people who want another governance system write it down on the back of the ballot sheet. We said this as the basis. March 30th was chosen for the referendum, and the referendum was held on that very date, that is March 30th.
The Imam was in Qom in those days, and on the early morning of March the 30th, came here, to the Char Mardan district, to take part in the referendum. The Imam's car arrived, and people rushed to see him. People surrounded Imam's car, and security forces couldn't hold them back. Finally, Imam had to cast his vote from inside the car.
جمهوری اسلامی رأی دادم. من امیدوارم که همه ملت اسلام، همه ملت ایران موفق باشند و ملت ما رأی به جمهوری اسلامی بدهند.
And about 2 or 3 in the afternoon of the following day, except for a few large cities like Tehran and Mashhad, the result of most cities was sent to the Ministry of Interior. At about 10:30 or 11 p.m., we had the final results, and I went to Qom with a report to tell Imam how things have developed. It was about 1:30 or 2 in the morning when I reached my sister's home and told Mr. Ahmad, I need to speak to Imam and I want to report report the status to him. He said, well, leave it for tomorrow. I said, but I have to return to Tehran early morning tomorrow. He said, then let's wait until Imam gets up for midnight prayers, and then we can meet him after he's said his morning prayers. We waited and met Imam then, and I congratulated him. This phenomenon was unique in the history of our country and will never truly happen again. This turnout figure and this voting process, despite all the obstacles and challenges out of the eligible voters being a little more than 94% of the population, actually attended the election process. That was about 98% that voted yes. However, about 315 or 16 people and instances wrote a different governance system, the People's Democratic Republic.
After people's vote for the Islamic Republic, the constitution was written and then put to vote. Then, parliamentary and presidential elections took place with a huge turnout to realize the slogan of neither East nor West, just the Islamic Republic. In those days, the Imam came from Qom to Tehran and rented a house in Jamaran in north of Tehran to live in. The house was next to a Husseiniyya, or a small mosque, where people met the Imam until the last days of his life.
مسائلی بود که هیچ اراده ما درش دخالت نداشت. هرچی بود و تا حالا هرچی هست و از اول هرچی بود با اراده خدا بود. من هیچ برای خودم یه چیزی که عملی خودم کرده باشم، یه چیزی برای خودم قائل باشم نیستم، برای شما هم قائل نیستم. هرچه هست از اوست.